This is ESPN Radio.
No quarterback controversy here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And for anyone that missed it, we did have a caller yesterday after the weekend for the backup quarterback that was try and suggest that Cooper Rush had actually created a quarterback controversy in Dallas for Dak Prescott. Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio, right after us from 7 to 9 Eastern, and who will be co-hosting with me on Rankings Reaction coming up tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, on all of your ESPN digital platforms as we get the first round of CFP rankings. Where were you when you heard that phone call?
Yeah,
first,
I was driving down the road, and I legitimately was like yelling at my radio. I was, don't do it! Don't do it! The minute he started. Like, you just, I don't understand. Sometimes fans, just the love affair that fans have with backup quarterbacks specifically is amazing to me. Because, like, you're presuming your entire staff is too stupid to realize they got the wrong guy starting? Like, that just...
So you thought he was serious, Chris? Because I still maintain that I feel like we were being trolled. Were you thinking he was serious, Chris?
No, I thought he was absolutely serious. Mm-hmm. It's ironic that the best thrown ball on Sunday night actually came from Cedric Wilson and from Cooper Rush himself. But yeah, I thought he was being dead serious, and it's crazy how infatuated fans become with the backup quarterback, with the guy that they don't see that often.
That was, by the way, not the dumbest thing that was said on your show yesterday, though, because it took like 3 minutes later for you to say that there were no good teams in the AFC, to which I may have texted you in a four-letter word.
Yeah, no, you weren't happy with that one, Jason. I will say, though, that as we're set right now, I look at what the Kansas City Chiefs did on Monday Night Football last night. I'm done. I'm out. I can't do it anymore. So, football-wise, I will cede control to your Las Vegas Raiders in that.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that, and I'll get you a jersey. There we go. Welcome to Raider Nation, Mike, now that you're a lifelong diehard fan. That's how I took that, by the way, that you're now a lifelong diehard fan.
No, that's what I figured as much for you, Jason. So we can get into more of the NFL action with you on a later date here. But I mentioned we're going to be involved on ESPN Digital in a rankings reaction show that we've been doing now. This is going on year five, coming up at 8 Eastern. The rankings are going to come out before that, Jason, and this year feels different than most because of a number of things, but I think first and foremost is the presence of the Cincinnati Bearcats. They're number two in the AP poll right now. What do you think the committee is going to do with them night one, Jason, and what should they do?
Yeah, so that's the most interesting, that in Oregon and where they fall on head-to-head. One thing I stress every year and we talk about every year is it's a different committee every year, right? So how does this committee value where they are? And at this point, it's a drinking game. You hear me say this every year. Everybody asks if it's best or is it most deserving. It's best of the most deserving. So this is the moment where if the committee is charged with getting the four best teams in, I'll ask everybody the same question. If you had to bet every dollar you'll ever make for the rest of your life in your house on Alabama versus Cincinnati on a neutral field, who you taking? I think we all know what the answer to that is, which, if I'm on the committee, means I'm not putting Alabama below Cincinnati. If I was on the committee, I would have Cincinnati in the fringe 4-5 area. I think tonight what's interesting to me is if the committee has them any lower than number two, I don't think they have a shot at making the playoffs.
So, Fitzy, you mentioned Oregon. I mean, right now, I mean, how much is the committee going to weight the win over Ohio State, and how much does the loss to Stanford and the Pac-12 being down as a whole affect them in terms of being able to make a case to vault up into the top four?
It's something I've yelled about every year with Mike, that I feel like the committee pays more attention to the losses and what the story and context around the losses are than they do around the wins. So sometimes we see a team get extra credit for what's considered a good loss or extra doubt for a bad loss. I think the committee's going to ding Oregon a little bit more than we expect because of a loss to Stanford, even though they were, you know, down in that game, down their offensive coordinator in that game, obviously. So, like, those are things the committee is told, specifically charged with, you must consider every factor of the game. So how they value that, I think, is going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's always the interesting part, is the reason we were switching from the BCS to this human committee was supposed to be able to have allowance for context, like you just mentioned. The fact that you mentioned we've got 7 of the 13 committee members are new this season. Also, Tyrone Willingham, who was on the first committee, is now back on this one. So a different perspective and all that. You mentioned for the Oregon game. All right, Oregon, down their best pass rusher and player in Kayvon Thibodeau against Ohio State, and they still get that win in that game. Down their offensive coordinator, Joe Moorhead, when they lose that game to Stanford on what was some deem a controversial pass interference call towards the end of that game versus Ohio State. Because the other part of this, Chris and Jason, that I always think about is what we all know. you're allowed to get better throughout the course of a season. These are college players, and it tends to happen pretty often. And when people look at the Ohio State and the Oregon argument, the argument is, all right, what has Oregon done for you lately here? Limped through a couple of wins against the likes of, you know, Cal and UCLA. You got a big blowout against Colorado finally to show some life here. But ever since that Oregon game, Ohio State's been a buzzsaw. They have been chewing up and spitting out the Big Ten. My contention with them is that they're going to have their day in the sun to prove this, because the Big Ten East is all going to lock each other in a room and fight to the death here coming up soon, and we're going to know who comes out on the other side. So I'm not as concerned with where they sit now, because they're going to have plenty of resume points to boost their stock.
And to that point, Mike, we've seen past committees, basically whenever there's a they can earn it moment, the committee just lets them earn it. So like this undervalued thing happens a lot where the committee's like, yeah, well, we've got them at eight. And, you know, if they win the schedule ahead of them, then they'll play their way into the top four. Like, it feels like this committee could definitely take a very easy approach with the Big Ten in general of, hey, they'll work it out amongst themselves and figure out who's going to be there.
Do you think they'll put Ohio State over Oregon?
Yes. I think they should put Ohio State over Oregon. Because, again, I'm going to go back to the one metric for me. Like, right now, Ohio State, Oregon, playing a neutral field? Ohio State's playing better right now.
Yeah. Chris, that can only go so far, though, right? Because I hear people say this all the time, especially relative to this. The games on the field have to matter. And we consider head-to-head. We consider common opponent and all this. The committee's supposed to consider conference championships down the road as a potential element. Like, these are all on there in addition to the eye test, Chris.
No, I'm with you 1,000%. But, I mean, I think when we start talking about the road to toe for Ohio State, they will clearly have a better case to be made if they can run the table than an Oregon team right now. So I'm with Fitzy on this one. I think Ohio State's going to have the better case to be made when this is all said and done about being in the college football playoff. But Fitzy, you know I'm an ACC guy, so I got to ask you about the team that we got in the top 10, Wake Forest undefeated, if they were able to run the table. And I know it seems like it should be possible given their schedule upcoming in the ACC championship. Could they find their way somewhere in that top 4 to 5 range of the college football playoff?
I don't think so, but I think what's funny about that is, like, everybody's just dismissing Wake Forest. So I would guess I would go to ACC and college football fans and be like, what the heck do you want? Because everybody says it's too repetitive every year that we get Clemson all the time. Then Clemson's out, and all of a sudden we're like, oh, the entire ACC's trash. Like, there's got to be some middle ground where we let teams earn it. Unfortunately, the problem is the ACC just hasn't, and I'm not just talking about their win-loss record. I'm talking about, you know, as Harry Douglas always says, my buddy says, watch the tape, watch the tape. The ACC, when you watch the tape, just doesn't look all that great, right? So when you've got a bunch of teams that are beating each other that don't look that great in the process, I don't know that you get as much street cred for winning as much as they are. So right now, it'd be hard for me to find a path for Wake Forest unless I'm going to turn around and find losses for Oklahoma and losses for who we haven't even mentioned and losses for Cincinnati. Like right now, neutral field, Cincinnati, Wake Forest, I'm taking Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably.
And I only say that because Chris isn't in the room and he's much larger than I am. Would have been a much different answer if he was in the room.
But that is probably what and people have asked me this a lot because I called Cincinnati's game last weekend and be calling their game this weekend against Tulsa. And the one thing people ask is, why don't they get the benefit of the doubt that some of the other blue bloods in college football that have accomplished on a similar basis, largely the same Cincinnati roster that went toe-to-toe with Georgia last year in the Peach Bowl, went toe-to-toe, almost won that game. I would argue they do. They're number 2 in the AP poll right now, as opposed to, what have we seen? Clemson bulldoze through a largely lackluster ACC and still be rewarded. Wake Forest isn't getting that benefit of the doubt because we haven't seen much of that from them in the past, and their schedule shook out that way. Cincinnati scheduled tough non-conference with IU and Notre Dame, but I think they also are getting some of that big boy effect that a guy like Luke Fickell as a head coach will bring with all of that Big Ten smell around
him. Don't we do that in the NBA every year where we predetermine certain guys are going to be on the lookout for MVP and all of a sudden we watch them more closely?
Well, that's the preseason rankings. That's right. Exactly what preseason rankings end
up doing. But that's what we've done with Cincinnati. There was so much preseason chatter to Cincinnati. I think, to your point, I haven't talked to a lot of college football people that aren't giving Cincinnati a ton of benefit of the doubt.
It's going to be interesting to watch here. We've got all that coming up at 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. You can catch me and Fitz and Christine Williamson on Rankings Reaction coming up at 8 o'clock Eastern on all of your digital spots. Fitz, get out of here. Go make sure that I've got plenty of food and snacks waiting for me when
so
I get
many
over there.
Cheez-Its. We're going to eat so many Cheez-Its.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. Oh, I can't wait. All right, coming up next, though, I'm sure there's something else that Giants fans can't wait for that's potentially coming up the rest of the season, and it's got nothing to do with headsets. We'll get to that after this word from Bank of America. Guys, it's baseball season, and you are ready to go all out. You ordered the essentials to make game day over the course of the championship a success. You got a jersey, you got a power recliner, you got an even bigger screen, and you use your Bank of America customized cash rewards credit card, choosing to earn 3% cash back while shopping online. Rewards that put you toward an essential element of the celebration, an air horn. Apply for yours, the card, not the air horn, at bankofamerica.com/more rewarding. Copyright 2021 Bank of America Corporation. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr. trying to fix the Giants on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. We just had Jason Fitz come through and give us a little bit of a preview on the show that him and Gojo are going to be doing, recapping the college football playoff rankings that are coming up a little bit later on tonight on our air. But, Mike, we got to get back to what was on ESPN on Monday night, which is the New York Giants losing to the Kansas City Chiefs, an outcome that we all pretty much expected, but just not as closely contested as folks would have thought going into that game. That was a three-point game in the fourth quarter, and it could have gone either way. And unfortunately, we did have some miscues by the New York Giants and by their head coach, Joe Judge, down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think we're going to separate out, you know, the wheat from the chaff on this, so to speak. Like, when you look at some of the things that happened at the end of the game, we talked about their fullback getting a taunting penalty in a way that cost that team. I'm not going to lay that on them. That's a lame rule. We can make that a coaching thing if we want, but I'm going to separate that one away.
Okay.
But you mentioned some of the other mistakes that came down in this game, some of the other penalties that we saw in key situations, and certainly Joe Judge's management of timeouts, especially Chris approaching the two-minute warning there. Heard Peyton Manning pretty critical of that on the Manning cast as well, but just not understanding how to work in those spots, blaming some of that communication stuff on the headsets. All of that is going to be falling on deaf ears for the guy that was supposed to come over here and instill law and order into this situation.
No question about it. I mean, that's one of the things that I would point to as one of his more egregious errors from last night's game. But also, late in that second quarter, I mean, the Giants had a red zone possession, and they had a 3rd and 4, and they call an out route to Sterling Shepard, and the receiver runs a 2-yard route on 3rd and 4, Mike, in the red zone. How else do you explain that other than coaching? I mean, that was clearly the play call that they wanted under that circumstance. I mean, it's one of those things that you rep in practice, and the receiver has to know that they need to get beyond the first down marker in order to convert on that situation and have an opportunity for 7 rather than settling for a field goal. To me, that is one of the things that you have to point to and say, this is a coaching error, and either Joe Judge is letting the players get away with those mental lapses or he's coaching it that way. Either way, it's a problem for me. And so even though Dave Gettleman has been the one that's getting most of the attention when it comes to the shortcomings of the New York Giants the past couple of years, we're going to have to start pointing at the head coach, too, because Joe Judge made his mistakes last night, and those mistakes cost his team an opportunity to win a football game.
Yeah, Chris, and I think it's always been their fates tied together for me here, right? Like, those fates not only tied together around their quarterback, who I think Daniel Jones actually going to survive this thing, because contractually, as you pointed out time and time again, they don't have to do anything with him here. Like, if you were going to extend him, that would probably mean Gettleman and Judge were going to be coming back, and I don't think that's going to be the case here, especially when you see quotes like this. So Joe Judge was asked about the Giants' strategy around the trade deadline, and he said, quote, "Making no trades was best long-term decision for the Giants. We're good with just moving on with business as usual." Chris, I don't even know what that's supposed to mean, because I don't understand what business as usual is supposed to be around there. We talk about culture, that thing that coaches are supposed to come in and set, and that we damn sure saw Joe Judge trying to set during the preseason. It's what you do consistently, what you allow there to happen. There's been nothing consistent about this Giant season so far, so I don't know what business as usual is supposed to mean or why it's supposed to sound like a good thing here.
No, there's been something consistent about this season. The consistency is the losing. And the mistakes and the miscues in late-game situations costing them. I mean, you're talking about an offsides penalty costing them another opportunity to win a football game. I mean, if O'Shane Zimenez doesn't jump offsides and Pat Mahomes still throws that football to that same receiver and Darnay Holmes makes the interception, the Giants are kicking the field goal. They're winning on the road in Arrowhead. But, I mean, this is the second instance. We saw what happened in the game earlier this season against the Washington football team. Dexter Lawrence jumps offside on a field goal, gives Dustin Hopkins another opportunity for a crack at it, and he knocks it home. Like, those things can't continue to happen, especially when the coach that you brought in is preaching discipline. If you're so hot on discipline, then damn it, why isn't your team more disciplined? You had 10 penalties to the tune of 90 yards. You don't have that kind of margin for error with the team that you have, with the offense that you have. So at some point, something about that has to change. And to come out here and to suggest that you're going to continue with business as usual is a slap in the face to every Giants fan that's out there.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And I agree with you, Chris, especially because you mentioned some of those mistakes. I can look at and say, hey, listen, these are also pros playing on that team too. Like, you got to know out there, go out there and handle your business. There's got to be enough personal pride to, in those situations, be diligent enough. But as you pointed out, when it's over and over again, when it's not just any one guy repeating those mistakes, when it's something that looks pervasive, anything that happens repeatedly goes back to coaching. That's something, whenever it's turning on the tape, whether it's seeing technique displayed on a routine basis, whether it's in-game decision-making on a routine basis, or whether it is the mistakes you make penalty-wise, what you see done repeatedly is, again, what is allowed by the culture, and that is set by the coaching staff, Chris. You've heard this statement time and time again. You're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen, and Joe Judge feels like an easy punching bag at this point, but unfortunately, we have seen the similar mistakes popping up for this team time and time again, and that can only come back to one person at some point.
Oh, no question about it. And last year, we were willing to give them the benefit of the doubt when they started 1-7 just because we recognized that that was tough circumstances in a pandemic-affected year. No OTAs, no training camp. I mean, well, modified training camp and no preseason games. Like, you could understand Joe Judge and the Giants getting out to a slow start. But that's not supposed to be what happened this year. As a matter of fact, Logan Ryan, who is one of the team leaders, came out and said, the organization and ownership gave us a chance to win with the roster that they put in place. And with that roster, Joe Judge has coached them to a 2-6 record. Now, you might want to point out all the flaws, all the issues that they have on the offensive line, the injuries to the skill position players. But when you look at what the expectations were from the ownership, from people within that building, Joe Judge has fallen far short of the mark. And here's the thing. We can blame it on the players underperforming, but you can't get rid of all the players. You can get rid of the coach. And so I think we're starting to get to that point where the conversation is going to get a little bit louder around Joe Judge and whether or not he's the right man to lead the Giants into the future. And I feel like that conversation is justified based on the job that he's done. His record is 8-16. As Bill Parcells used to say, you are what your record says you are. And he's a losing NFL coach.
And that is going to be something they have to try and figure out as they get ready. They're coming up on a bye week here pretty soon. They've got one more game against the Raiders before that happens. And then I'd imagine a lot of soul searching going on around that building. Coming up next, though, you want to talk about soul searching. Atlanta sports fans bracing for impact. We got a potential clincher in the World Series coming up tonight. We'll get more on that after we tell you about an opportunity where you can win big tonight, no matter which team is winning on the field here. Because we're getting ready to hook up one listener with $6,000 during tonight's baseball championship game. To enter to win, here's what you got to do. Listen to tonight's game on ESPN Radio. In the seventh inning, Dan, Eduardo, and Jessica are going to announce a winning word. You text that word to 777-000 to enter for a chance to win $6,000. And keep listening to all our ESPN Radio broadcasts of the baseball championship, because the prizes only get bigger. In fact, the prize grows by $1,000 for each game. So, the series goes all the way to seven. Do some math. Prize is going to be $7,000. Amazing, I know. Notre Dame degree, so proud. There's no purchase necessary. You can go to ESPNradio.com for complete sweepstakes rules. One more time, listen to Game 6 tonight. Hear the winning word. Then text it to 777-000 for a chance to win $6,000. Message and data rates may apply. Back after this, Candy Angola Jr., ESPN Radio.
The NFL trade deadline is today at 4 Eastern. Follow the very latest moves. Get complete reaction and analysis. Plus, what's next? From Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max starting at 6 Eastern and continuing all day. The NFL is on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline, and that's where we go right now for Game 6 preview of the World Series. We're going to bring in MLB analyst on ESPN Radio, Chris Singleton. And Chris, tonight we got the matchup from Game 2 when it comes to the starting pitchers with Max Fried and Luis García on the hill, and it didn't go the way that Max Fried or Brian Snicker wanted it to in Game 2, only going 5 innings and giving up 6 earned runs. So what does he need to do differently tonight in order to better navigate that Astros lineup?
Oh, it appears we have lost Chris Singleton. Do we not have Chris? Right now.
Okay.
We're still going to try and get him back here to answer that question for you, Chris, because we've got Atlanta fans everywhere waiting on bated breath trying to see if this thing is going to go off the rails tonight here, and we need Chris Singleton to try and give us some sage advice on that one. Because, Chris, I don't know, like I approach most of this emotionally with baseball, especially in this series, because it feels like there's higher powers at play when it comes to this one here, but I could be wrong on that.
No, you could be, but here's the thing, man. Atlanta fans have had enough with their sports teams collapsing when it comes to the championship rounds of their respective sports. Like, I mean, nobody forgot what happened with the Atlanta Falcons against the New England Patriots, the first overtime game in Super Bowl history, and the Falcons being on the wrong side of that. So, I mean, we've seen it time and time again when it comes to Atlanta sports, and it just feels like with the Atlanta Braves jumping out to a 3-1 lead in the World Series against the Astros, I mean, they had plenty of opportunities to be able to win one more game and go ahead and ice this thing off. And if they can't get it done, then I can't imagine the state that L. Duncan and all the Atlanta sports fans are going to be in if the Braves have another collapse.
Well, and Chris, I think the thing that's got to be most worrisome, right, is how it happened in Game 5, right? When you look at the core of the Astros team on their side, in the first 4 games of the World Series, Yuli Gurriel, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, and Alex Bregman were 8-for-19 combined, scored 6 times, and drove in 4. In Game 5, they went ahead, in Game 5, they went 18-for-19, scored 6 times, and drove in 4. Over the first 4, they were combined 10-of-59 with 5 runs and 6 RBI. So it had been a completely different team driven by the best players in that group. And we have Chris Singleton now, our ESPN MLB analyst, joining us back on the Goodyear Hotline. And Chris, why don't we start there? I mean, the way Game 5 went with the bats finally waking up in the core of that Houston lineup here, how worrisome should that be for Braves fans?
Yeah, guys, it's very concerning for Braves fans, and I don't need to tell you. You guys cover sports in every sport. We can talk Falcons. We can talk Bulldogs, right? Braves in the 90s, a lot of disappointments, even with success. So, yeah, without question, there is some tension here as I'm in the Atlanta area, and they know that disappointment is very possible. It's going to be tough. It's Max Fried's going to have to go in there, pick up where he left off. He finished his outing last time really strong, the last 2 or 3 innings. So he's going to have to stay in that groove, get ahead in the count, and then finish hitters off. But, yeah, these bats have come alive for the Astros. And, you know, with that crowd tonight, it's going to be a battle for the Braves to win it.
And, Chris, you covered one side of the pitching matchups tonight. I want to get to the other one with Luis García from the Astros. We're not expecting to see him on the hill very long tonight. Who's Dusty Baker going to turn to in order to try to piggyback García and get outs for this Astros team?
Well, it's going to, you know, the score is always going to dictate that. But more so for Dusty, it's going to be all about, you know, the higher leverage guys. So even if García falters, you know, a little bit early, he's going to have more of a quick hook. So, you know, the bullpen's completely rested when you consider the off day yesterday travel. So there's no one that's no pitcher that is unavailable, but he's going to definitely go to the higher leverage guys, whether it's, you know, the Christian Javier's, if he needs to get, you know, multiple innings, if it's a matchup, he needs to go to Raley or possibly Taylor for a left-hander situation. And then, you know, hoping that he's got some type of lead into the final, you know, 3-2 innings that he can deploy Graveman, Kendall Graveman, and Ryan Pressly.
Canty and Golic Jr. talking to Chris Singleton, our ESPN MLB analyst. The World Series is on ESPN Radio, presented by AutoZone. Catch all the action starting tonight, coming up after us, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. And Chris, heading into tonight's game, we know everything that's riding on it. We don't have to state the obvious here. if you got to look for a key on each side here, a player you're watching that you think is going to swing the balance of this game here, who is it for Houston and for Atlanta, respectively?
Yeah, this game is all about pitching, right? I mean, you're as good as your starting, you know, your starting pitcher that day. So I would say definitely out of the gates, all eyes are going to be on the starters. We saw, you know, the beginning of this series, low scoring games, not a whole lot, maybe some late action. And I think, you know, that's kind of how it needs to go. I think that, you know, that would allow managers, you know, to kind of do their thing. I think this is a tougher game for Brian Snitker to manage than it is for Dusty Baker. Dusty Baker's got nothing to hold back. He's going to be aggressive with his relievers and hope that his offense scores. Brian Snitker's going to have to see, who do I need to hold back for a potential game seven? But, you know, with that said, starting guys, you know, offense, Carlos Correa could get going, that's for sure. See if Alex Bregman's keeping both hands on the bat like he did last game. That seemed to help him a little bit. He got a big knock. But, you know, on the Braves side, man, Max Fried, he's got to be the guy that he was, you know, arguably one of the best pitchers in baseball from July on. So it's going to start on the mound, I believe, on both sides.
It's going to start on the mound, and it could finish with a World Series champion tonight. A clincher on the way for the for the Atlanta Braves, potentially. It's already bad juju out there for
don't
the Braves.
Do it, Mike. Don't do it.
I don't need to add to the pile on that one. Singy, we appreciate the time tonight, man. Enjoy the game. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. You too.
Awesome stuff. Chris Singleton, our ESPN MLB analyst. Please, no one clip that and send it to L. Duncan. I don't want to die, Chris.
Yeah, and here's the thing, man. As a Yankees fan, you know I couldn't take that. The Astros being able to win another World Series, man. I just couldn't take it. Like, that would be the dynasty that Brian Cashman promised all Yankees fans after the 2017 season, where he said he wasn't going to jeopardize championships for one championship. Meanwhile, we're still waiting for the same Yankees team to get back to the same point that they were at when he made that statement at the end of 2017. So I don't know, man. You saying that about the Astros, I just feel like you're putting bad juju out in the universe, and I'm just hoping that it doesn't come back in the way of Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman, being able to hold up another World Series championship.
Yeah, after the Game 5, again, that they had the other night, that's got to be the thing at the forefront of almost everyone's mind here. So good luck tonight, Atlanta. I'll be checking out college football stuff in the meantime. Coming up next, though, speaking of that, we had some monkey business going on yesterday in the internets that we're going to try and address here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canny, all guests joined us today via the Goodyear Hotline. Got to give a shout out to Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News, getting us up to speed on what's going on with the New York Football Giants. Also, Jason Fitz of Spain and Fitz coming through and giving us the skinny on what we can expect for the college football playoff rankings. And then, of course, Chris Singleton, MLB analyst on ESPN Radio, getting you set for Game 6 of the World Series tonight. If you missed any of it, go to the Canny and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, and subscribe. But, Mike, it's that time of the show where we got to get to 3 and Out.
All right, let's get to 3 and Out, and let's try and wrap our arms around the story I'm about to take you on. Because, Chris, during Monday Night Football last night, the internet got taken on a journey in the college football world.
Is that right?
Yes. So I'm going to omit names in this because these are all allegedlys and internet rumors here, but I'm just going to say that a college football coach was reportedly linked to a former adult dancer who apparently had a pet monkey who bit a kid on Halloween. Allegedly.
What?
All of this allegedly.
What?
So again, there were tweets going out last night from Thomas Campbell, who claims to be a credible source in this situation.
Okay.
Saying that a former stage dancer, whose name was Pole Assassin, had a monkey named Gia, who used to be a part of her performances. The tweet alleged that apparently on Halloween, that monkey bit a child, which prompted the woman in question to take to Twitter defending her monkey Gia, essentially saying she was provoked in this, saying that 11 and 12 year old children should know better than to enter someone's yard without permission. It all got very hazy, Chris. It led to someone deleting their account entirely. But the crux of this against is that someone was accused of having a monkey who bit a kid in the backyard and tried to beef about it on the internet during Monday Night Football.
But how can you be upset at kids entering somebody's yard without permission on Halloween night? How does that even make any sense? That makes no sense. like a coach dating a woman whose nickname used to be the pole assassin, that actually makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Now, why she has a monkey, I don't understand it. It feels like a movie that Demi Moore was in once upon a time. Like, it just, I have so many questions. It's unfortunate what happened to the kid. I just don't understand a lot of all of the things that are going on in this story. Like, again, so many questions. I don't feel like we're going to get to the bottom in any real answers. But it just seems like one of those things that's too far-fetched to happen, which makes me feel like it happened somewhere in Florida or Texas.
No doubt about that. No doubt about that. Candy and Golic Jr. here on 3 and Out. Let's move on to something that also shouldn't be surprising to all that many people. Marcus Smart called out Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown after the Celtics lost their third game in a row Monday night, saying that the duo needs to get their teammates more involved. He said, quote, "Every team knows that we're trying to get the ball to Jason and Jaylen. Every team is programmed and studied to stop Jason and Jaylen. I think everybody's scouting report is to make those guys pass the ball. They don't want to pass the ball." Chris, I don't know if this sounds like he wants them to pass the ball more or if he wants them to pass the ball to him more.
Well, I mean, listen, it sounds like both of those guys are out there gunning, trying to prove that they are the number one option on that team, and they feel like they know better than the other in terms of what direction that they got to be going in. And with the new head coach trying to break him in, it just feels like there are a lot of moving pieces, a lot of strained dynamics amongst the guys that are in that locker room. And with Marcus Smart coming out here on the record and saying something like that, I don't feel like the Boston Celtics are going to get anything fixed in the short term here. I mean, this is a really talented team, but the chemistry has been off the last several seasons. We haven't figured out why they haven't kind of lived up to the expectations with having two superstar players in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. But I think we're starting to get some insight as to why it's not working. Those two guys kind of competing against one another rather than working with one another and trying to win basketball games.
That pair combined for 48 points in a late game that saw the Bulls come back from a 19-point deficit in the second half. Tatum scored just 2 points on 1-for-8 shooting in the fourth quarter. Brown was scoreless on just 2 shots. So you're right. Something's got to change there pretty soon, or else this Celtics team is just going to continue to do what they've done in recent years, underwhelm despite expectations. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. How about this one, Chris? We talked about this when it actually changed. Facebook, the company formerly known as Facebook, I should say, announced that it would be changing its name to Meta. Their billionaire owner, Mark Zuckerberg, made that announcement, apparently without checking with the folks from Meta PC, who are set for a nice payday. The PC retailers, led by Joe Darger and Zach Schutt, applied for the trademark Meta in August for their PC company. The founders say they spent considerable personal funds on marketing their brand. Mark Zuckerberg then announced that rebrand for Meta last week, and now legal experts believe that PC retailers are going to be unlikely to have exclusive rights, but it sounds like they might get a nice $20 million payday from Mark Zuckerberg. And Chris, my initial reaction was, that doesn't seem like enough considering the party involved that you're dealing with here.
Yeah, but you know, if you go to court with Mark Zuckerberg and his resources that he's got with the backing of what is now known as Meta, formerly known as Facebook, you're probably not going to win that battle. And by the time you see some money, it's going to be a long time from now. And so those guys are probably just taking what they can get. I think the story here is, did these guys have the inside line on Facebook changing the name to Meta and try to beat them to the punch with trademarking Meta for their PC company? That's what I would want to know.
The same way that like people would squat on Twitter handles and then make famous people buy them off them. Devin, am I crazy here?
Listen. Or the guy from the Washington football team and just squatting on all of the names that they could potentially change that teams to. So I'm just saying.
I think you need to hold the line here, honestly. He had this big press conference, all this stuff. And it's all revolving around this name. $20 million is not enough. You hold the line. You get more.
This is exactly like when they start offering you miles or a voucher to book a seat on the later flight at the airline counter here. You're going to offer me a $200 voucher? Talk to me when it's over a grand. My time is valuable. Let's drive this thing up here. So I hope the boys from Meta hold strong in this endeavor to try and make it happen, going up against the artist formerly known as Facebook here. All right, we got a lot in the works today outside of all the weird monkey stuff going on here. So coming up next, you can stick around here on ESPN Radio. We've got Game 6 of the World Series between the Astros and the Braves. We've got the college football rankings getting set to come out at 7. We will have more for that for all of you tomorrow here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.